Conananian.
On a Mazda Miata, to get to the fuel pump, you have to remove the fuel pump access plate, which is along the back deck lid. Convertible car, you move the bucket seats all the way forward, and you squeeze your gigantic body compared to this car into the back seat area there, and you take off the deck.
The Car Doctor.
Something's weird here. And all of a sudden, out of the corner of the left side of the access hole, pops up Mickey. You know, Mickey Mouse. The mouse is sitting in his chair, remember? Like, what are you doing in my car?
I've got everything planned. You see, I was saving it for a surprise.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron and Anian, the Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, it's time to start your engines. Hello and welcome. Ron and Andy and the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900. Here to take your calls and answer your questions, whatever you've got going on automotive-wise. 855-560-9900. Give us a call. Let's talk about it. Let's solve that car problem. More information about us down here out at cardoctorshow.com, as well as podcasting is available there. And keep in mind that the 855-560-9900 phone number is 24/7. You can call it any time, day or night. We're live on the air Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m., but Tom Ray, executive producer, chief cook, and bottle washer, will call you back and put you in the next live queue if you leave a recorded message on that line at non-show hours, and we'll be able to talk and converse about your car problem, whatever it might be. I want to go back to last week's show. Last week's show, we had a really unusual call. The gentleman, I think he was from Maine, with the Camaro that was condensing water and it was rusting. And my answer was, you know, let's look at the environment. And he sort of verified the possibility of environment being the cause, because he said that the garage would water and the would build up in a surface of his toolbox and it would rust over time. And, you know, either that car was a water magnet, no pun intended, I'm here all day, folks, or it is environment. And you have to look at environment. You have to look at how is that vehicle being stored. I thought of it this week when Tommy brought me his 2012 Jeep Grand Cherokee. I've known Tom and Sherry. They live in town. And I've been working on their cars for, 35 years. And I can remember all their cars. Their 85 Ford Crown Vic wagon, sky blue. Their 97 Dodge Grand Caravan. There was one in between, I think, but it was very short-lived because one of the kids took it out west and it was never seen or heard from again. And their current cars, their 2010 Dodge Grand Caravan and Tommy's 2012 Jeep Grand Cherokee. The Grand Cherokee was in for service, 60,000-mile service. And when I tell you Tommy keeps a clean car. Tommy prides himself on really, you know, everything is spit and polish and, you know, everything's in its place. He was an HVAC technician for a local hospital, so he's very meticulous and, you know, put the tools away, and everything has its place with Tommy. And you can see it in the way that he takes care of his vehicles. If you're in Tom's car and working on it one day and it rains and you're caught in the rainstorm on a road test, the water just instantly beads up on the hood because everything's waxed all the time. It's very well cared for. So he was in for a 60,000-mile service, and it was, you know, fluids and fuel system cleaning and the typical things you do at 60,000 miles on most vehicles today. And I did the trans service first, and I noticed, you know, and I said, geez, am I crazy? But the pan on the transmission, the paint, and it's the NAG 1 trans, so it's the Benz trans in a Chrysler product. And the paint on the pan is starting to lift at the edge, like it's getting rusty and it's pushing the paint away from the steel. And there's a little bit of a rust blister. There's a very low-level rust. It's beyond being a pimple. It's a rust blister that's starting to form on the bottom of the pan. I said, Chrysler, all junk, right? No, we'll just, you know, hold your judgment. And, you know, how could that be? The belly pan on the transmission, you have to take down this dust shield, and there's four bolts that hold it up into the cross frame to, you know, keep it in place. And all three of them, the first three, fought me tooth and nail coming out. The fourth one snapped off clean right in the frame. And here's a 60,000-mile, well-cared-for vehicle. And you say, geez, that just doesn't seem right. I had to rotate the tires. When I rotated the tires, you ever look at the end of an axle flange, a CV drive axle? It's put on with a nut, right? The nut goes on and it holds it in place, and then the cotter pin goes through. And, you know, then it's covered up by the wheel, so it's kind of protected. So I took the wheels down to rotate the tires, and I just couldn't help but notice that there's this blob of rust where there had been a nut. I called Tom up. I said, you got to come down and see this. I said, I don't get this. And we started talking, and the 85 Ford came up. And I said to him, I said, you know, if I'm not mistaken, Tom, you know, throughout the Ford's life, we were kind of plagued by rust, but not nearly as bad as this. And I said, why does in my mind seem to think that rust is a problem for you? And he thought about it, and he said, you know, you're right. He goes, the past five cars I've had over the last, because Tommy keeps his cars over the last 25 years, they've all kind of had excessive rust problems. He said, except for that, and I forget what he said it was, the one before the 97 Dodge, because that one went west right away with one of the kids. So it seemed to have escaped. And I said, this is an environment thing. I just keep coming back to environment. I said, Tom, you don't have a garage, do you? He says, no. And I said, any other cars in the neighborhood really rust out as fast as yours? And he said, not really. He said, but I don't really talk to anybody. And I'm kind of parked off by the side. He's at the end of the street. He's the last driveway. And, you know, you'd have to see the neighborhood, but he's kind of the last driveway. And then, you know, it's the dead-end street. And then there's railroad tracks. And then there's some freight yards on the other side of the railroad tracks. And we're talking about it, and Tom looks at me and he says, of course there is the salt pile. The salt pile? I went, you know, you're right. At the end of the tracks, at the end of the street, on the other side of the street, on the other side of the tracks, there's a salt pile that used to be the DPW salt mine, and, you know, now it's something else, and they're getting rid of it slowly. Because the problem is it rots the railroad tracks. And, you know, but when I say it's probably a good, it's got to be, 1, 2, 3, it has to be 4 football lengths. It has to be 400 or 500 yards away. Easy. It's 4 or 5 houses, the width of 4 railroad tracks, the other side of the parking lot, the other side. So that's got to be, I bet you it's 600 to 800 yards away. And then it's shrouded by a protective fence that they seem to have to replace every couple of years because it rots away. they haven't found anything yet that'll hold up to it. And I thought about our car up in Maine. And, you know, you think about the corrosive effects of environment and you don't realize. You know, Tommy just took it for granted all these years. But we kind of put two and two together and said, you know, look at it, 5 cars in a row, except for the one that got away because it moved west. And it's not so much the car, it's the environment that it's in. And it just goes to show you how important and how big a role environment plays. Tommy never knows goes on that side of the tracks. He's got no reason to be over there. But the wind in bad weather and rain and everything, and the wind come whipping down the street, and it just carries it over and over time. You know, once again, proving my theory that buying a new car means you just earn the right to throw it away one piece at a time. But, you know, so just food for thought. Look at the environment. Look about and, you know, maybe you got to think about getting a garage, maybe, you know, a big garage so you can store extra stuff like extra cars. But I just wanted to pass that along. That's what this radio show is, right? We talk about cars and we solve problems. But I just wanted to let you know, I really think it's environment. I think it's going to be environment with that Camaro up in Maine. I'm curious to see what happens when that fellow moves the car. If he moves the car out, does it still continue to rust? Because I know of no reason, no way, no how that a car can be a water magnet like that. So anyway, food for thought. We'll return right after this. We'll open up the garage doors and start taking calls, 855-560-9900. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Don't go away. I got it. I got it.
write it on the wall so you don't forget to call for car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Now, back to Ron.
From the great state of Kansas, home of Dwight Eisenhower, Yosef with an 05 Honda Odyssey. How are you today, Yosef? How can I help?
Well, we're flooded up here.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, the floods throughout the Midwest part of the country are tough this year, right? Look at, where is it, Iowa?
Iowa's
taking a beating.
Kansas, and pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, so, well, not New Jersey, I can tell you that. We're fortunate. Of course, we'll probably have the drought, and we'll be buying water from you guys. So, we'll see. What can I do for you today?
Well, I have a couple questions for you on this Honda Odyssey that I've got.
Okay.
Well, it's my dad's, but I noticed this the other day. But as I was getting into the driver's side sliding door, it was hard to open. Like, the door would open partway, and then it would go back closed like it was power-assisted. But then when I go to try and open it again, it would keep doing it like something was caught in the mechanism.
Okay.
To open up the door.
Okay.
And then when I went to try it on the passenger side door lock was making like a funny buzzing sound.
For the sliding door or for the passenger side front door?
Passenger side front door, okay. The door lock.
Okay.
Is that normal or do we got issues?
No, it sounds like you've got, it sounds like you've got two separate things going on, but I would tell you to fix the slider first on the chance that something's commanding the slider and affecting the passenger front. But to be affecting the passenger front, in theory, the way those cars are wired, it should be affecting the driver's front, too, if the command is being given.
Well, the command, the driver's door, I mean, we have to manually unlock it and lock it ourselves with the key.
Because the actuator's broken?
I think so.
All right. So let's do this. If you were to disconnect the battery, and I'm talking a little esoterically here, if you were to take power away from the vehicle and open that slider, is it still bound up? Does it still feel like it's binding, or does it open normal?
We've tried. There's like a switch on the driver's side
to turn
panel.
It off.
Yeah, we've tried that, and it seems like it's still binding.
Okay. So let's make an assumption, which is a bad word, but we'll start here, that we've got a mechanical failure of the sliding door mechanism. All right? If you look at the side of the car, there's the track that the back of the door rides in, and there's a plastic panel that's above that. That's the body trim. You can actually take that whole panel off and get to the track mechanism itself just to watch it, but what typically happens here, if there's nothing jammed up in that roller, and sometimes you have to look to see if there's schmutz, which is a technical term, jammed up in that roller on the back half of the track, or in the bottom of the track where the door opens down where your feet go in, just to make sure there's no debris, obstructions, cups, kids' toys, jelly beans, I mean, you name it, I've seen everything crammed in there. As long as both ends of that are clean, the next place you have to stop to consider is look at, and if you study the door carefully, you'll see there's a cable that connects to the front of the door and the back of the door. It basically comes out the front of the door, goes down the whole left side of the car, depending on which side the door is on, and then feeds into a trolley assembly tucked behind the wheel well inside the body, and then a cable comes out the other side, and it's a push-me-pull-you deal. So as the cable gets shorter here, it lengthens the other way. So the motor pulls on the cable, it pulls the door open, it extends it the other way, and then it wants to close, it pulls on the opposite side and retracts the other. So that's how they power the door open and closed. I have seen more than a few of those mechanisms fail over time, especially on a higher mileage. And when you take one,
I think there's like 166,000 on it.
You know, you've got to stop and think about, you know, how many miles are on it, how many times that door has been open. And when you see this, you'll have to take apart the interior trim panels. You're gonna say to yourself, could they have made this any cheaper? Because it's all plastic and metal cable. It's just a terrible design.
Has Honda recalled this issue or anything?
No, Honda doesn't make mistakes. Come on. So Honda.
Oh yeah, that's right.
You know, Honda's one of the most perfect car companies there is. They never make mistakes, brother. So, but that's where I would chase that. Now, as far as the lock actuators, I'd have to tell you, I'd like to see, you know, find that actuator, take the door panel off, find that actuator. It's part of the latch assembly for the door. And, you know, put a voltmeter, unplug it and put a voltmeter across it. Do you see it being activated? Or do you see that it's only activated when you put the switch on, you know, open or, you know, lock or unlock?
Right.
What we're trying to find out here is, and I've seen this, where the actuator itself, which is part of the door latch, as I've said, starts to go bad, and they chatter. They can't push it all the way to the open, or can't pull it all the way back to the closed or locked position, so it chatters. It sort of dithers in between. It's just lost. You'll end up probably putting a latch assembly. I don't believe they make the opener available separate, but just be wary of what you buy. Aftermarket parts get to be a little cheesy. I'd probably still go with an OE Honda part or some such equivalent.
I do have one more question for you.
Sure, real quick.
With the Honda Odyssey, I did notice we did have a check engine light come on a couple days ago. And we did run a onboard diagnostic on it, and it came up with like a wiring harness fault or something like that up in the engine. I'm trying to remember exactly.
It depends on what number fault code you had, Joseph.
So,
depending upon what it is, otherwise I'd have to extrapolate out 1,800 possible reasons on what they are. So if you think of it and you get the fault code, you remember what it is, shoot me an email, ron@cardoctorshow.com, and I'll be glad to give you an answer that way. But take a look at those other things, and here a scan tool would really help, even in just doping out a sliding door. There's a lot you can look at with it, and you may want to try and do that as well. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. We're on the name of the Car Doctor here at 855-560-9900. Let's get over and talk to Peter in Connecticut, 07 Honda CRV. Peter, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Yeah, hi, Ron. Great to talk to you.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
So I have a Gremlin in my air conditioner system and heating system on this CRV.
Okay.
I'll go through all the symptoms. So one day in February up in Connecticut, it's kind of cold in the morning, as you know, and the heat. The cabin just didn't heat up enough, and the air was coming out warm enough, but I figured out that the fan just wasn't blowing on high, and it would blow on high when the car was just started, but then later it wouldn't blow on high. So I put a new resistor in. That wasn't too hard to do, and that fixed the problem for about a month. The next problem, I could hear the air conditioner clutch clicking on and off about every 2 seconds, on, off, on, off, on, off. Even though I didn't have the air on or anything. Then eventually the air conditioning stayed on all the time, even though I didn't have any, you know.
Peter, was the air conditioning in defroster?
No, definitely not.
Was the air conditioning in the heat position?
Probably.
Okay.
You know, I tried the vent. I tried different positions.
If you turn the heat in the vehicle completely off, does the compressor click off and stay off?
Say it again.
If you've got the heat off, no heat, no AC, nothing, no blower, no request.
Yeah, it would still click on and off. It would still click on and off.
Okay.
I'm sure I had everything off, and it would still click on and off. Yeah, and then even if you turn the air conditioner on, it would still click on and off.
Okay.
And another symptom, like say you shut the car off and then you turn the just to the on position, I can hear the fans, the two blower fans up front, the radiator. They were like on, and sometimes they would vary up and down the speed.
Okay.
So then the last problem now is now the heat's on all the time, and the blower fan switch knob, which is like a variable, that does nothing, and then the temperature control does nothing. So now we have heat on all the time. So the one last piece of evidence to tell you, that unit does have like a self-diagnostic test if you push the buttons right.
Right.
So I went through all that, and I got code 6, which if I remember right, it's just like the blower, there's something wrong with the blower circuitry. And the way that system works, the next code would have said internal fault of the heater control assembly. But it won't tell you that because code 6 is in front of it. So I'm just wondering what it could be. That control assembly, heater control assembly in the car is like $500.
Well, before I went and do that, I'd be real curious. You have access to a scan tool?
No.
You know, because
just the OB2 one.
Yeah, and that won't give you what you need. Yeah. I'd be curious. Do you have the old blower resistor?
You know what? I kept it for a month, and then the day I threw it away is when this started acting up again.
What brand blower resistor did you buy?
I think I bought it on Amazon. I think it was a Honda, though.
Be sure.
I'm not sure. I can't. No, it probably wasn't a Honda.
Yeah, it's, you know, be sure, because even if it came out of a Honda box, doesn't mean it's a Honda piece, because we see a lot of counterfeit parts up on Amazon and everything online. So, you know, you really have to question it, and that's an issue. I give the dealer credit for a lot of things, and one is at least, you know, they're sourcing. They've got to go through such strict channels that I'm very confident when I buy a Honda part from the Honda dealer, it's a Honda part. And I'm wondering, you know, what sort of input that would have. I wonder what would happen if you unplug that blower resistor. Would any of the other symptoms change or alter the way it's, you know, just you'd have no blower, but what else would it affect?
That's a good idea. Maybe I should investigate that.
You know, because it sure seems kind of strange that you had a simple lack of blower response, and then all of a sudden, a month later, it developed this secondary problem. I have seen a few control head issues, but understand what you're looking out from the outside in. You're seeing the tip of the iceberg. That control head is part of a communications network, and you'd have to be able to, you know, pin out power ground signal. You'd have to look at it on a scan tool. If you push the on-off button, does the scan tool record it? If you push an AC request, does it record it? In other words, you can measure correct response off of that vis-a-vis a scanner. And and there's other things you can do, but you know, I would want to see that response as one of my primary tests. Now, and you know, we'll eliminate some of the other things that everybody's going to talk about. The AC compressor clutch relay on that generation Honda, they should actually, when they sell you the car, they should tape one to the inside of the glove box and tell you to put it in when the car's got 60 or 70,000 miles on it and it's 7 or 8 years old, because, like, the sun's going to come up, the relay's going to go bad. So there are other relays that match that if you look in the control center under the hood. Just,
right.
You know, do we have two or three different problems here, you know, unrelated to each other, which are hard to diagnose because we don't have enough tools yet. You know, if we look in the control unit and on a CRV, I believe it's in the relay box over on the passenger side closest to the firewall. It's going to be in the engine compartment. It's either there or it's in the it's in the battery box over on the left side. But
I found where all the relays were.
Read the legend. The one that says AC, which in Japanese will be the one with the ice cubes and the fan on it, and that's how they do it. You know, if you can find another relay same part number for something innocuous, you know, fog lights, wiper motor, something like that, swap it. Does it make any difference? Do yourself a favor, take a magic marker and mark the two relays before you pull them out of their sockets, because I guarantee you, you'll find two relays, you'll pull them both out, and the phone's going to ring, or somebody's going to call your name, and you're going to turn your head and go, "Whoa, which one was which?" Been there, done that, brother. You know, those are the things I'd be thinking about. That piece you're talking about, that control head, that's an actual controller. That's an actual computer. on that vehicle. So it's a pretty major piece. It's a pretty expensive piece. The fact that you can put it through a self-test, unless it came up with a fault for internal ROM error or internal memory error, I would tell you the fact that it can go through self-test, I wouldn't suspect it yet. I'd be looking everywhere else.
And yeah, maybe that transistor, because they call it a resistor-transistor type of thing. So
right.
Maybe that can be messing up with all the electronics.
Right. Well, it can be, depending upon how it's wired. You know, I've seen simple fan resistor blocks for vehicles today. They're wired in as a controller on the network, and it's got to communicate this way and take information from that way.
Yeah.
And, you know, good in, garbage out will, you know, affect the rest of the network going south. And the fact that the problem happened after that, you know, I always try to look for the simple.
Right.
So
I kept that part for a month too.
I know. I'm like that myself. But let's try looking at it like that perspective. And if you have to, look at it this way. It's a reason to go buy a better scan tool.
Right. So if I disconnect the transistor there, see what happens. If not, I probably have to go to a dealer, right, and they can scan it.
They could scan it. They could diagnose it. You know, let me ask the hard question.
Yeah.
What'd you pay for the resistor on Amazon? What'd you pay for the part?
$50. $50.
All right. And $50. How much is it from Honda?
Probably $100.
Don't deal with probablys. Find out. Because when you find out it's $200 from Honda and you paid $50 for it on Amazon, Amazon's good, but they're not that good. That's a bogus part. So.
All right,
kiddo.
All right, Ron. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You call me back. You let me know what happens if you need to. Okay, Peter. Take good care. I'm Ron Anani in the Car Doctor. We're back right after this. Hey, welcome back. Ron Anani in the Car Doctor. Sorry about that, Mikey. I was a technical problem inside the show here. So we're doing good so far, though, right? Yeah, we've had a good hour so far. Let's go talk to Franklin in Maui, Hawaii. Look at that. We have two listeners now in Hawaii, Walter and Franklin. Franklin, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
It's a long time since I talked to you.
Thank you, sir. What's going on?
I'm going to turn 76 next month, and I'm looking for my last car.
Oh, come on. You know, why do we all think like that?
No, this one I like.
Okay.
I had it when I was 16, a 1939 Cadillac LaSalle.
Wow.
And I was at a junkyard, and they were going to torch it. So I said, how much do you want for it? They said $65. So I gave $65 and drove the car home.
And that was a lot of money back then.
Oh, yeah. $65 was they wanted for trash because they were going to cut it up.
$65, what year was that? That probably had to be...
57.
Right.
1957.
So that was that a week's salary in 55, 56,
57? I made 90, let's see, what did I make then? $40 a week.
Yeah. So that was a week and a half's pay.
Yeah. But it was fantastic. What a car. And I was driving on an unopened freeway, and the right tire fell off. It went forward. And the car didn't even tell us that we lost the tire.
Imagine that. You know, you stop and look at cars, Franklin, right, and the romance of the automobile. Before the show today, we were listening to an oldie station, and Meatloaf, Bat Outta Hell, came on. And we're sitting there, we're singing it in the studio, and we're all doing our work, getting ready for the show, and we're all, and I said to Tom, it was over, and I said, now, you know, it's such a great tune, but it's a car tune. How many people, you know, can remember being in their car doing 60, 65, tearing back through some country road, listening to Meatloaf scream that at the top of his lungs, and what a good time that was.
That's what we used to do, but I wasn't allowed to have a radio in my 57. Chevy. My dad said you can't have a radio, so it had a plate there because that was distracting.
Well, I
guess
think
what it is today.
I don't know if it was in 57. In 55, radios were not installed at the factory. It was radio delete. I don't know in too many cases where radio was a dealer installed accessory, I believe, in 55. And
I didn't get the radio, but the worst thing was with the 57, it was a six-cylinder. And we had to, when you go up a hill, the windshield wipers wouldn't work. You know, would cause that back
sure,
then.
Vacuum, because they were vacuum wipers.
Vacuum.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So there was a lot of things that 57 had that the 39 did not have.
So what you're saying
I love that 39.
What you're saying is the teenagers of today that are driving Honda Civics, probably when they're 76, aren't going to be going somewhere to find another 2019 Honda Civic to bring back memories of their childhood. That probably just won't happen.
Remembering the old cars to save them. That's what I used to do.
Yeah.
Saving the cars. I had a lot of them.
Yeah.
The best was the 455 GTO HO. That was on the cover of magazines.
Right.
Way back when. 1972.
Well, you know, and I think the fascination a lot of us have with cars, like we see cars, yeah, they're neat and they're cool and they're tough and they sound great and so on. But
electronic and electronic this, electronic that.
Well, yeah, but they're history, right? You know,
yep.
the curvature, they're the curvature of a 55 Chevy front fender, I forget, I think it's 27 separate stamps and dies in order to make that they couldn't reproduce that fender for the longest time because they didn't have the technology. And you know, you look at how cars have constructed and evolved over the years. And now they're just stamped out. I think it's, you know, three movements and they've got a car. Just
yeah.
It's just
but also is they're redoing the old stuff again.
Right.
So you can buy a 57 Chevy in a box.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Which is amazing.
Yeah, nobody's reproduced the
2002
Honda. Well,
when I get
Honda.
The car, you can come to Maui, Hawaii and see it run.
Well, we might do that. Yeah, because it would probably be hard for you to drive here to see us.
Yeah, there's no driving on the ocean.
Well, it depends. If you ask certain Democrats, no, I can't say that. They'll tell you it's okay. There's a bridge. So, all right, not getting political.
That way.
I better go. They're going to shoot me. Ron and Annie and the car doctor.
You're doing a great job.
Thank you, Franklin. You take good care. So, yeah, we can't really say that. Wasn't there a politician that said she wants to eliminate, I'm going to state facts here. Wasn't there a politician that said she wants to eliminate airplane travel and this way we're going to travel around by train, right? No more planes because of pollution, right? So I'm not, yeah. And I think it was AOC, right? She said, and the senator from Hawaii said it's going to be kind of hard to get to Hawaii. Somebody Google that and let me know if I'm wrong. If I'm wrong, I'll apologize. But that's what I remember about a month and a half ago. That 2 months ago, that was, you know, the Green Deal. We're gonna all take trains. Yeah, let's see you get to Hawaii real quick. 855-560-9900. This is not a political show, but we're trying to keep us on the straight and narrow and avoid stupidity. I'm Ron and Annie, the car doctor. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron and Annie, the car doctor. We're going to wind it up this hour. Hey, quick tip from the Car Care Council. They've come out with a new video on tire pressure monitoring systems. The Car Care Council's new video about TPMS, Rich White, executive director, talks about the meaning of the symbol on your dashboard. It's important to vehicle safety. Driving on underinflated tires can damage a vehicle and potentially cause a damage. Low tire pressure also leads to lower gas mileage. You know, it's true. And a lot of people are out there driving around with that yellow light on. They should have made it a different color, the manufacturers, than a yellow light for TPMS and a yellow light for check engine. People kind of, it's just another dashboard light. We're just immune to it. But when that yellow light's on, there's a problem with your tires. Just like when the check engine light's on, there's a problem with the car, and you want to get that resolved. And there's more information. If you want, you can check out the video and more information from the Car Care Council at their website, carcare.org. All data, you know, I want to talk a little bit about all data and bulletins, right? A lot of you ask me questions about bulletins, technical bulletins, and what it's all about. I was reading their website. I was up on alldata.com, and they've got a real good article about Mode 6 there. You go to alldata.com/mode6, and you type that in, Mode 6. It's down in the blogs, but it's a really great breaks down Mode 6 in a very complete and accurate manner. They came out with a recent bulletin that talked about 04 Explorers running bad at low RPM, and you have a 171-174 lean fuel condition fault code. If you don't know about this bulletin, and in it, it talks about problems with the vacuum lines rubbing against the crank sensor area causing a lean condition, you'll never fix the car. Things like that and more at All Data. Check them out at alldata.com. Till the next time, I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.